For the innovator, shaping strategy is an important element of making sure the innovation is a success. For the innovation leader, strategy becomes a frame for directing and controlling the discipline of innovation as a part of making sure an organization is relevant and acting in concert with the changes that are confronting that organization through the processes of innovation. The leader of innovation is more interested in forming a frame or a context for innovation in order to assure that innovation itself is sustainable in the organization. Hagel, Brown, and Davison, in a recent October 2008 Shaping Strategy in a World of Constant Disruption article, indicate how important it is to create alignment between strategy and the sustainable direction of the organization. In today's language, shaping strategy includes a high-level commitment to understanding the processes of technology and incorporating technology into the economic enterprise. These techno-economic realities now govern, if not guide, the whole process of shaping strategy and mobilizing organizations in a way that keeps them relevant and sustains them over the long term. A shaping strategy is essential to help redefine the terms of competition and investment and long-term viability for any corporate entity, including hospitals and healthcare systems. A significant element of innovation is not only creating the innovation, but getting others to buy into it and to see it as a part of shaping the future of a particular industry or product. Especially now in a time of transformation, uniquely in healthcare where the demand for transformation is critical, it is important for the leader to recognize how vital alignment of strategy and integration of strategy with the operations of the organization is becoming. Again, awareness of the external and internal dynamics that affect choices that are made and actions that are undertaken in organizations is a critical part of creating that alignment, a part of building the ability to make necessary and appropriate changes is to make sure that strategy reflects the characteristics of the direction that the external forces are indicating and the alignment of those forces with the choices that are made by the organization. In healthcare, hospitals and healthcare systems are now under tremendous pressure to begin to start thinking about seriously aligning the infrastructure of the organization, the operations and clinical activities of the system, and the external impact of technology and infrastructure changes in the broader society as a whole. Leaders of innovation now need to be able to translate this language into the activities of clinical care at every operational level of the healthcare system, and to be able to give that language meaning and purpose to every purveyor and practitioner in the organization that is fulfilling in some way the direction and intent of the organizational activities of healthcare. It must be remembered by the change agent and leader that all around us in the external environment and necessarily in the internal response to it, that we're living in a profound and accelerating arena of change and time of great transformation in every part of the socio-technical environment. This new techno-economic paradigm, as Perez calls it, in Technology, Revolutions, and Financial Capital, demonstrates essentially that the role infrastructure plays in shaping healthcare systems, business activities, and others is critical. There now needs to be a goodness of fit between the prevailing structure and the behavioral and activity changes in an organization. An organization cannot change and sustain that change without building an appropriate and aligned infrastructure that creates the demand for that change and supports it with the appropriate systems and structural components. For the leader, this fit between infrastructure and response, especially that related to behavioral change, cannot be understated. No behavior can be sustained if the infrastructure necessary to support it isn't aligned with it and changed as well. This makes the argument for understanding the cultural implications and systems impact of any particular kind of adaptation or change to an external demand. People's behaviors must be supported if that alignment is to be accelerated or sustained over the long term. Without understanding that degree of relationship and incorporating the realignment of structure with the behavioral patterns that are necessary to respond to external and internal demand changes, the leader simply does not make the necessary changes over the long term that can be self-supporting and directed. In the old model of leadership, often the leadership believed that by force of their own personality, insight, role, and control mechanisms, they could sustain a change simply because it was right. However, in healthcare and in other knowledge worker-driven environments, this particular model is a failure strategy. While certainly short-term and incremental changes can be occurred through such demands, they cannot be sustained unless engagement and ownership is invested as a part of the long-term trajectory for change. This demand and need for engagement and ownership of the knowledge worker implies, if not directly suggests, that they play a role in the shaping of that strategy, in the alignment with the infrastructure that's built, and with some sense of ownership and obligation at a personal level of their commitment to making a meaningful and appropriate change. The difference between knowledge workers and other employee work groups is that the knowledge worker has some sense of ownership of the knowledge and work that they do. This sense of personal investment serves a twofold function. Number one, it incorporates the individual's values into the work processes. And two, it engages the knowledge worker at a higher level of commitment and investment in the work itself and the outcomes of that work. It is in the knowledge worker that accountability has been most clearly defined and can be most certainly exhibited. This understanding of accountability as a part of the products of the work of knowledge is a critical difference in the responsibility delineations often associated with other kinds of non-professional or knowledge worker groups. In healthcare, this delineation is really critical with regard to translating strategy into action. Without some sense of understanding, some sense of translation into meaning, and some sense of personal value, the commitment necessary to sustain strategic imperatives and to translate them into tactical activities is constrained, and often short-term, since the knowledge worker has a sense of value and ownership with regard to the work and anything that might influence it or challenge it. Therefore, for the knowledge worker, understanding meaning, engaging that meaning, translating it into something that has value for the knowledge worker and influences the products of knowledge work, is a critical part of strategic formation and needs to be now understood by leaders as an important element of effective leadership in knowledge worker or professional communities. In addition to this understanding, Hegel, Brown, and Davison suggest that there is a new kind of infrastructure that is evolving in the organization that also influences the effectiveness of the work done there. This infrastructure is built on the sustained and exponential pace of performance improvements in technology applications such as computing, storage, and bandwidth. This is critical for healthcare since so much of it now drives how health information and health decisions will be made in the future, if not today. Because of this underlying technology and because of its continuous, dramatic, dynamic, and rapid change, there is no inherent stabilization incorporated in it. Therefore, stabilization is not an infrastructural element that the knowledge worker can expect or see in the context of doing knowledge work. This is a little disturbing for the knowledge worker, since stability has historically been looked at as a sign of health and integrity in the work environment. Now, with the continuous and dramatic and dynamic increments of change that are constant in the management of technology and information infrastructures, a whole new frame or capacity of thinking needs to be incorporated into the leadership and practice activities of professionals in clinical environments. The problem with rapidly evolving technologies is that traditional structures are not designed in a way to remain constantly available to these individual changes or collective of changes, and as a result, the composite shifts in technology applications and in the translation of those applications in real time becomes very difficult, especially when one considers the vagaries of practice. Building evidence-based practice frameworks really represent and reflect many of these high-paced, continuous, dynamic mobility and portability changes in information management and the influence of information in clinical decision-making. Also, this same process applies to major strategic decision-making, as constant assessment of the environment, shifts in that environment, external and internal convergence of impact, all have a significant and dramatic influence on the shaping of strategy and the making of strategic decisions. Today's new digital infrastructure suggests that small actions and investments and impact are often disproportionate to their size. This might suggest that new innovators and small and nimble enterprises can often outpace and outmaneuver, as well as outcreate, the larger, more traditional, and slow-to-respond organizational constructs. But in truth, larger organizations can also enter this game, depending on how much of their infrastructure reflects the technological demands of readiness, response, and information management. However, innovation leaders in this set of circumstances will need to help the organization and the organizational leadership rethink their approaches to strategy and embrace entirely different and new management practices. Now, historically, the absence of equilibrium adaptation keeps an organization on its toes and more available to the changes that may confront it. However, quickly responding to an immediate and dramatic change may not necessarily be the most effective approach to making that change. Adaptation is necessary, but it may help the organization and its leadership really miss the real opportunities available. The author suggests that now is a time to really upend prevailing perceptions of risk and reward. Because of the traditional approach and dependence on traditional management processes, this is difficult, especially in times of high uncertainty such as these days. Confronted by rapid change, executives often instinctively magnify their apparent risk and discount the kinds of rewards that could be obtained in it. Now, this problem creates some real difficulties and challenges for the organization. It often leads the organization and its leadership to be timid in its action, and even at times to inaction. It's important for the shapers of strategy to look a little bit differently at the diminishing perceived risks and maximizing perceived rewards. Clearly, these leaders need to reduce the fear in rapid change and in the challenges of that change, and really begin to help people engage that change and shape it in a way that affects the organization in a meaningful way. Also, this approach motivates a larger number of players to make more investments and to take aggressive action in order to accelerate movement towards a preferred outcome. The author suggests that the focus and incentives necessary to unleash distributed innovation are embedded in this kind of response. Now, it's true that some strategies will certainly rely on the participation of many other companies, but shaping strategy uniquely seeks to provide the incentives and capabilities for large-scale and distributed innovation. Davison, Brown, and Hagel suggest that changing the risk-reward calculus, as they call it, in a time of rapid change really involves three interrelated elements: a shaping view, which helps focus participants; a shaping platform, which provides leverage to reduce the investment and effort participants need to make; and finally, specific shaping acts and assets, which persuade participants that the shaper is serious and can pull off the shaping initiative. These elements combine to help shapers quickly attract and mobilize a critical mass of participants. These participants then can unleash powerful network effects, make shaper difficulty stop, and help others meet the challenge of reshaping. The author suggests that there are five tests of a real shaping view. They are: does the view express a perspective on the long-term direction of a broad industry or market and highlight how it will change? 2. Does it clearly identify attractive business opportunities for a wide range of participants? 3. Does it tie these opportunities explicitly to broader economic, cultural, and technological forces at work on the business landscape? 4. Is the view at a sufficiently high level to allow for unexpected developments, yet specific enough to direct and focus the thinking of leaders faced with difficult choices? And finally, 5. Has it been aggressively and continually communicated by senior leaders to external audiences and to the members of the organization? Let's examine closely the three elements and how the authors use them as a frame for helping shape innovation. The first element is a shaping view. Changing the shaping view is changing the way potential participants actually perceive market opportunities. Here, altering mindsets can materially influence the perceived economic incentives to participate. At this particular stage, a clear and compelling long-term view of the relevant industry or market must be undertaken. Again, looking at the trajectory, current circumstances, doing some integration of the assessment to determine whether that trajectory indicates a long-term set of viabilities, helps participants envision the rewards and potentials and to act consistent with them. It also helps reduce the perceived risk by putting those risks in a longer-term perspective and aligns them with their trajectory and the choices that seem apparent or appropriate for that particular trajectory, leading to positive and more well-defined outcomes. This shaping view may not initially be very well detailed, but it does give an idea of the trends, the directions, the trajectory that will influence the choices that we'll make and will require further refinement later on. Having a compelling view of the industry's direction, of the forces influencing that direction, and how confluence will occur is a critical innovation leader skill set and application. Shaping this insight helps give competence and helps individuals as well as teams or organizations feel more strongly about the choices that they make, the actions that they're taking, and the path that they're on, and their confidence that comes from leadership that there is some sense or meaning with regard to the choices that are made related to the pathway that they're on. This emphasizes the importance of distinguishing between a shaping view and the way businesses have conventionally used the word vision. The author suggests that vision tends to be too narrow. They describe only the direction of the company articulating the vision. Shaping views, instead, starts with a much broader perspective, but a clearer perspective on the direction of the market, of the industry, of the trends, of the society, so that this broader-based convergence of forces helps articulate the value creation implications for everybody in the industry. The question regarding where healthcare is going and what directions are they taking as it gets more and more informed by the alignment of the infrastructure with decisions that are made. It's just such an example of recognizing the broader based influences that are ultimately going to affect the construction, choices, and design of the future of healthcare. Corporate visions sometimes tend to be broad in their perspective. They describe the future in vague terms to accommodate almost every choice or action. Shaping views, on the other hand, must certainly also be a high-level activity, but they allow room for more specificity, a little less uncertainty, a little more experimentation and application of the discipline of innovation, and they also focus more tangibly on the investment of energy, commitment of resources, executive and leadership attention, and, of course, the choices made with regard to the actual trajectory the organization will select. The second element that is emphasized by Hagel, Brown, and Davison is that identified as a shaping platform. They also identify five tests of a shaping platform. First question is, does the platform promise financial benefits to potential participants, especially by reducing their cost of entry, accelerating the prospect of generating revenue, or both? Two, does it support a diverse set of participants and actually offer opportunities for creating value in many distinct niches? Three, can the platform scale up by accommodating large numbers of participants without adding unacceptable cost for the shaper? Four, is it likely to generate increasing returns as participation grows? And five, will its functionality continually evolve, providing an incentive for participants to engage regularly with the platform owners and share their own learning and plans? A shaping platform is a set of clearly defined standards and practices that help organize and support the activities of many participants. And shaping platforms usually offers one of two forms of leverage. Some provide development leverage, which is derived from new technologies and reduces the investment required to build and deliver products or services. And the second type of a shaping platform provides interaction leverage. This reduces costs and effort required for a number of different participants to coordinate their activities together. Although a platform may have technology components, the key value lies in a set of standardized protocols and practices designed to facilitate interaction, like ISO 9000. Shaping platforms can offer both development and interactional leverage. Shaping platforms provide powerful leverage both for the shaper and the participants. For participants, a good platform increases their functionality, decreases their adoption costs, and accelerates revenue generation. And these effects are amplified as their participation continues to grow. By encouraging distributed innovation among participants, platforms can assemble an ecosystem of diverse niches, allowing participants to specialize in the areas they best know and avoid head-on competition with everybody else in the same platform. This diversity emerges from platforms offering a wide range of functionality that can be addressed by large numbers of users with highly specific needs. From the perspective of its owner, a shaping platform really helps to concentrate knowledge flows created as participants engage with the shaper. For example, an emerging shaper aggregate performance data by doing so offering participants insight in how the structure of an application can enhance appeal to advertisers and others. These platforms then serve as a tool set and a frame of common action where the synthesis and conjunction of supporting infrastructures and tools and standards and processes can that help an organization innovate and change. Element three of Hagel, Brown, and Davison's model is identified as shaping acts and assets. Here they have six tests of a shaper's acts and assets. The first one identifies larger incumbents and raises the question, given all of your other business initiatives, how can you convince potential participants that you are in this venture for the long haul, even in the face of potential and major setbacks? For smaller entrants, the question is, how will you gain access to assets that will prove to potential participants that you have sufficient resources to pursue a successful shaping strategy? And for all shapers, they have four questions. What have you done to assure potential participants that they won't eventually compete with them? Secondly, do your senior management team, board members, and key stakeholders have the tolerance for risk and the patience required to commit the assets and take the actions essential to being a successful shaper? Third, is your organization capable of attracting and mobilizing enough participants to realize the full potential of shaping platforms? And fourth, does your leadership team, and especially your CEO, have a forceful enough personality and a strong leadership team to help build a shaping narrative that is plausible, vivid, and alluring to participants? The shaping organization's acts and assets themselves constitute a full third element of shaping strategy. Even the most compelling shaping view and the most robust shaping platform can really be undercut and short-circuited by would-be participants' lingering concerns that the shaper may lack the conviction or capability or determination needed for success. These participants are also very likely to worry that their own niches might become vulnerable to competition from a powerful shaper such as yourself. Selecting bold acts by the shaping company and carefully using its asset can sometimes assuage these concerns and reduce their impact. Now, these acts define the shaper's intentions. They help identify the degree of risk that the shaper is willing to undertake in order to demonstrate their commitment to the longer-term trajectory of the shaping that they're involved in doing. They are so committed to their activity that they're willing to sacrifice short-term impact and value for long-term significance. The assets also of the shaping company become a significant factor in helping to persuade participants to invest in the shaping strategy. The larger established organizations have a potential advantage as shapers because of their large asset base. On the other hand, smaller and new innovative entrants can face significant challenges on the asset front. The net asset value, of course, is obtained through the economies of scale and gathering the value of large organizations with significant asset value in a way that can commit that value to the longer term activity. Smaller organizations have fewer resources and assets and depend more heavily on the power of the assets of the larger organization, which may in some ways overwhelm their contribution or their sense of value. However, in committing to the partnership of the larger array of participants and sharing that, the long-term impact and long-term valuation may significantly offset some of the shorter-term asset considerations. A shaping company can also demonstrate to would-be participants their ability to successfully execute a shaping strategy in a number of different ways. First, by achieving critical mass quickly. If executed well, shaping strategies aggregate a critical mass of participants quickly committed to a powerful unleashing of forces that can get the process unfolding and going early and strongly. Secondly, by mobilizing the multitudes, shaping organizations can develop the institutional arrangements and management practices that attract and mobilize large groups of participants. Doing so helps ensure, again, critical mass and high levels of energy, and ensuring that the non-trivial challenge to potential shapers can grow and help focus all of the energies and efforts of the aggregate of participants on large-scale mobilization. And finally, by shaping again and again, once unleashed, the increased returns that have traditionally been a powerful force leading to virtually unshakable marketable positions and disproportionate generation of wealth relative to competitors. The power of the partnership, the power of the alliance, the power of the collective participants, and the power of success in shaping the markets and shaping the trajectory and shaping the frame of reference within which strategic actions get translated into strategy and tactics becomes a real value for the organization and can really drive the system to higher levels of success and overcome some of the difficulties that smaller efforts may not be able to survive. Successful strategy in this frame of reference begins to reflect the need to require and the format, process, and structure necessary to advance the shaping initiatives over time, and in this way continues that energy and that direction as a process that can be sustained over time instead of simply one significant, all-encompassing, disruptive big bang. Indeed, being able to use these processes might anticipate in smaller increments of development those kinds of things that, left unaddressed long enough, may become significant and sometimes overwhelming disruptive events that may require reaction rather than proaction. Finally, the author suggests that turbulent times demand that we learn how to shape the turbulence around us by creating an effective management of them that moves beyond simple adaptation to actually shaping and aspirations and direction and the trajectories that respond to prevailing challenges and changes. They suggest we now need to understand how we can turn instability into creating more positive and sustainable futures by understanding the digital challenges, the infrastructures, and some of the changes and challenges to those changes that will occur in the process of implementing significant strategic directions, being open to what they demonstrate through the infrastructure that makes us open to us, and having an effective shaping strategy demonstrated by the elements of having a strong shaping view, a platform upon which to shape and manage the trajectory of the future, and shaping acts and assets, which represents our ability to sustain that over the long term. In conclusion, the authors suggest a kind of four-stage process which helps overcome some of the intimidating feelings that a shaping strategy might engender in those who are listening to this program. A series of very simple yet important steps can help the shaper move the process in the right direction, a process that the authors call FAST. The first stage, F, is focus. And this is really kind of very similar to looking at the field that one confronts as a part of their own service direction over the next 5 to 10 years, and using scenario planning, plausible alternative futures, the estimate of the likelihood of scenarios, projecting potential implications for the organization and other participants over the long term affecting the industry or the business. Here, leaders engage in creative exercises and hold many off-site retreats and exploration processes simply to anticipate and explore initiatives that will improve their odds of realizing a future more favorable to the organization and more reflective of the direction the organization is moving. The second step is what the authors call accelerate. Here, they suggest that you identify 2 or 3 operating initiatives that, if carried out over 6 to 12 months, would most accelerate the movement towards the preferred future identified in step 1. Here, the innovation leader specifies and agrees on the resources essential to these 2 or 3 operating initiatives and on the metrics for success in them. The third step is what they call strengthen. Here, they suggest that you ask what major organizational objectives might prevent you from moving even further towards achieving your operational goals within the context of the trajectory that has been suggested by step one. Specifically, they suggest identifying two or three organizational obstacles that, if addressed, would most effectively speed up the process. And finally, the fourth step is tying it all together. Here, they suggest that the innovative leader needs to integrate all of the preceding activities and to refine them based on what you as a leader and your organization learns along the way by implementing these steps. This fast approach, they suggest, favors incrementalism and values an alignment between near-term performance and long-term direction. This convergence, this goodness of fit between performance and direction, is a critical element of measure for determining that the approach that you use for shaping strategy in an arena of constant disruption unfolds in a continuous and positive direction. Without the convergence between long view and the short steps necessary to implement vision, the opportunity for success is limited. This summary of Hagel, Brown, and Davison really provides just a foundation of information regarding new thoughts related to strategy and long-term trajectory from a basic level of view. Obviously, the elements of it are more complex and demand much organizational determination and commitment to the process. Deeper reflection and more reading on it, of course, is clearly suggested. However, what's important with regard to this particular podcast is for the innovative thinker in healthcare to begin to translate some of the language of business and of strategy shaping within the context of healthcare innovation and creating a frame for that innovation that can be sustainable so that the organizational constructs, the leadership activities, the activities of knowledge workers, and the assets and resource implications of translating strategy into tactics and action for success can be incorporated into the normal operation processes of those that are committed to building the future of healthcare.